Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
We're going to talk about it first, one of the crown jewels in the crown of Chicago theater, Steppenwolf Theater Company. World acclaimed. The people that have come from that theater, from John Mahoney and John Malkovich and Laurie Metcalf and Tracy Letts, and if I keep going on with the stars that came from that theater, we'll never get to the guests. So let me introduce you to the executive director of Steppenwolf Theater, Brooke Flanagan, and the associate artistic director, Lelie DeMoise. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks so much, Paul. We're excited to be on today.
Yeah, so I want people to know about a couple of things. The future of theater as it plays out, because you guys are not shutting things down. And in fact, you're going in a very different direction. Lelie, let me start with you to talk about the new upcoming season. It's virtual. You're not shutting the curtain on theater this season.
No, we're not, Paul. I'm so excited about our new virtual season called Steppenwolf Now. We're engaging so many different artists and trying things that we haven't really tried before, but really speak to this moment and the need for artists to express themselves. So we've got a 6-play season, a combination of filmed plays that were specifically written in the past few months. We have radio play adaptations, and we've got an illustrated play. So we've got many different forms of expression in this current season.
And by the way, if you have questions for Steppenwolf Theater, join us at 312-981-7200. So Lelie, you're saying that the plays we're going to get, and I've read through the list. I mean, one which is called What Is Left Burns just runs 20 minutes, although Wally World runs 2 hours and 20. It sounds like you are adapting and playing to the fact that in a virtual world, maybe it's a little different to try and keep people's attention on their screens.
Well, you know, we really leaned into that. Like, let's initially start with some shorter things, but then for a radio play, it's really once you enter this world, you're so enveloped by it, and that is like that is what Wally World, which is this epic play that is you know, a little bit longer, as you said, it's a good environment to act. But Steppenwolf Now was really coming out of what you said, like we didn't want to stop. We wanted to lean into keeping our programming alive and really saying, you know, we have some things to say. And so we didn't want to recreate what it is to come to a theater, because that's a singular experience. But we wanted to really, as I said, express like what we do in many different ways.
You also have young adults programs coming up, right? Because, listen, kids live on their screens anyway, so what a great group to play to.
Yes. As you may or may not know, Step Ed, our education program, is very active, not only to the students in the city of Chicago, but really to the surrounding communities. And very quickly, when we realized, you know, in March, when we kind of saw that we wanted to make a shift, that also included making sure that we can serve the students. So we got the rights, and we made a radio version of George Orwell's Animal Farm, which was adapted by a local actor some of your listeners may know, Steve Pickering. And it was an opportunity that came out of nowhere, and we've had over 22,000 students listen to it, not only in Chicago, but all over the world, Finland, Ethiopia, South Africa. So it's been like we really leaned into it, and it's been amazing what the reaction has been. And it's something that the students can listen to, and we've got this unbelievable program guide that was developed with the content, and so it really goes in-depth into the plays, and it's an educational tool that we quickly pivoted, and we provide to all our students all over the world now.
And Brooke Flanagan is the executive director. I'll come to the business piece of this. If people go to steppenwolf.org, joining a season of the virtual season, it's not even really as expensive as the typical season.
That's right, Paul. We really wanted to provide as much access as we could for these six pieces that were imagined for the virtual world. And so the basic Steppenwolf Now subscription for the virtual world is $75. And that gives you access all the way into summer of 2021 to these amazing six works that we're rolling out over time. And, you know, like any other theater, we are hoping and hoping that we'll get back to stage, right? So we have a regular subscription series that we offered, and we're, as we move across time, you know, we are, when public health and economic recovery form that Venn diagram and we can get rolling again, we will. And we have the generosity of donors that are supporting the theater as well. And what we feel like in offering this lower price point for our virtual world is that Steppenwolf, which is very much, I mean, you mentioned in the top, it is, we definitely have a lot of celebrity attached with our theater, but at our heart, we are a Chicago company. And we have been able for 45 years now to open our doors to our city. And now we have the great privilege to be able to extend that experience not only across the country, but around the world. And it's just thrilling to see people. We actually have a digital map that shows you not only all the schools across the world that Lelai was speaking about earlier that StepEd is leaning in on, but also the Steppenwolf Now subscribers that are in, I think, 300 cities across the world.
And I, of course, have been a proud member of the director circle for many, many years and sponsored some seats in the theater. I just love what you guys do and always stay active. And by the way, the names that I picked when I think of Laurie Metcalf and John Mahoney, what I love about them is even though some people move off to L.A. and New York, the actors I was talking about will always believe Chicago is their home no matter where their physical presence is.
That's right. And, you know, Paul, you mentioned you've been coming to the theater for years and have been a generous supporter yourselves. Those like you who have sat in those seats night after night over the years know that Steppenwolf is truly a home to our ensemble. We now have over 50 generative artists, some of the greatest national treasures that come back to Steppenwolf and know that they can dig into work that they want to discover. They can pivot if they are actors and they want to try their hand at directing or at playwriting. It is a space where our artists and their collaborators can dream big. And they know in a city like Chicago, audience members will come out with a voracious appetite for adventurous, exciting work. And it's just, it's amazing because now we have this multi-generational ensemble and you're starting to see that there is definitely a conversation between these generations bringing different stories to our stage that engage a really broad audience. And we're so proud of that.
And by the way, Lelai, do you also agree that Fran Guinan is one of the greatest actors? We should like rename the whole theater after him.
I'm totally with you. And he's so fun to hang out with. I love hanging out with Fran, and that's one of the things, you know, you miss when we can't gather. It's not only the work on stage, but off when people gather at the front bar and you can just talk about anything, any subject, the show that night or sports or anything. So that is something that is that we look forward to getting back to when we, you know, we're in the midst of this new building that we've been working on. You know, I wanted to add one thing. I think Brooke said something really beautiful about the intergenerational aspect. Those sparks that happen with those ensemble members is so real. We were doing a reading, maybe it was like, you know, 8 months ago. It was Jeff Perry and Karen Rodriguez, and they'd never really worked together. And Karen is much younger, and you know, she knows Jeff, of course. But doing this reading, they never read the play together. You literally could see like this magic that happens when the ensemble gets together and creates work. And we're so fortunate that we have this ensemble because to me it's like concentric circles of the ensemble, the staff, and the community of and supporters of like you who are part of this family. So we're really excited about what this new building will do once we get it open.
And I want to talk about that. And by the way, thrilled to see that Alexandra Buildings, part of your ensemble, is now going to be in the Connors with Laurie Metcalf. So see, it all comes full circle. And she has a long arc. But Brooke, talk to me about the new building, because when everybody else is putting a hold on everything, Steppenwolf is forging ahead with this incredible new project.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, I think part of what we're speaking about here is that the ethos and the energy of Steppenwolf being this home for generative artists, not just a Chicago institution, but one that lives and breathes. We wanted to make sure during this time when our doors to the public had to be shuttered that we could keep going, right? So we've invested in evolving our education programs, in creating new work like Steppenwolf Now, and as you said, in building this expanded artistic home on Halsted Street. What we're doing right now is the 1700 space, which is our innovative black box space next to the front bar on our north side, and our downstairs theater at 1650, the space that we've been performing in now for over 30 years on Halsted Street, will now meet a third theater, a round theater. It's a 400-seat intimate in the round space that was designed by Chicago architects Adrian Smith and Gordon Gill, ASGG, along with theater designers Charcoal Blue. And it is this beautiful jewel of a round theater. And there aren't any round theaters in Chicago. So we're really proud to bring this theater in the round and to add this artistic canvas for our ensemble members to create in. Also in that building is an education loft that will hold our Steppenwolf for Young Adults and Step Ed programming. It's the first dedicated space that we've had for education programs. And we sort of feel like it is this talismanic beacon of hope that we're creating. I mean, it seems slightly insane to be continuing on with a building project in the middle of a pandemic. But for us, this idea that we are a Chicago theater, we don't break, we evolve, we create, we build in this moment. This is the energy and the ethos that Steppenwolf has always brought to the stage. And we are so looking forward to being on the other side of this and bringing people back into our artistic home on Halsted Street, where we have these three dynamic theaters playing against each other and artists continuing to create and serve.
So true. And by the way, Lelai, we're about out of time, but I just have to quickly ask you, do you think that the folks who started this, I think, what, 40 years ago up in Highland Park, Gary Sinise and the rest, you think they could have foreseen where things are now?
You know, I think they put one foot in front of the other and just kept going, because that's really kind of the ethos of just let's figure it out. And I when I first started this job in March of 2019, Jeff Perry was the first one to reach out to me, and I'd known Jeff for, you know, many years, but we hadn't really talked, and he said, let's meet up. So we met up and he just started talking, just started telling me of like those being kids, being on the bus and having a teacher open their world up to theater, and how important education is. And that's what kind of is the origin of what they do, because they were just exposed to something and they want to expose a new generation of students. And that was really exciting, but I just think it's just one foot in front of the other. Let's get together and let's figure it out. And this idea of this community telling stories is really powerful. So I've been just privileged to be here and privileged to be part of this.
Well, I encourage everybody to go to steppenwolf.org, check out the virtual season, check out the new incredible expansive plans, and tell Fran Guine and I said hello, will you?
We will, Paul. He says hello right back. And thank you for being
Brooke Lanigan, Executive Director, and Lelai DuMois, the Associate Artistic Director at Steppenwolf Theater. You do great stuff. I'll look forward to seeing you on the stage again soon. Thanks so much. And you're listening to 720 WGN. And welcome back to the Anna DeVellante Show. This is WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick filling in our theater half hour. And joining me now to talk about Broadway in Chicago is the vice president of Broadway in Chicago. But she's also active in the League of Chicago Theaters and on the board of Timeline Theater and so many things. She's got the perfect perspective, Eileen Licario. Eileen, thanks for joining me.
So good to hear your voice, Paul.
Well, you as well, because we get to work on a TV show together, which is produced by Comcast. It's called Broadway in Chicago Backstage, when we get to sit with the casts of all the great hits, Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen. And I miss that, Eileen.
Oh, boy. I can't tell you how much I miss being in the theater and all the exciting projects we do, from the summer concert to all the openings in the theater and to your program, which has been so great for students and our audience members to be able to see a little bit of the backstage as well as inside information that you always pull from the actors.
And let's talk about, you know, I talk to a lot of theaters when I fill in for Anna, and we just had Steppenwolf on, and so many theaters who, you know, look to the public for the donations and funding. You guys are different because your tie is to Broadway theaters. If it's a hit on Broadway, you're bringing it to Chicago. So talk to me about the impact of how the closing of all theaters in New York has just trickled over to Chicago.
Yeah, well, I would say the theater community as a whole is really suffering because we're probably going to go, including Steppenwolf and all the 200-plus theaters in Chicago, will probably go without performing on stage for over a year from the time that we closed in March. And thankfully, the smaller theater companies have had help from the government. All the non-for-profits have had help from the government. Broadway in Chicago is too big for that. And we're really just hunkering down and figuring out how to move forward. And especially, like you said, we're connected to a much larger local, regionally, and national program, because when a Broadway show comes into Chicago, chances are it will leave Chicago and go to another city. So what a pandemic does to that kind of traveling company is sort of historic and heroic when it gets back up and running.
So, listen, as vice president, you are so critical to planning all of these shows. So when you look ahead, and I know nobody knows right now when you can open those doors again, how are you doing this? I mean, in other words, we're supposed to have Dear Evan Hansen here for a long run, you know, over the holidays and such, and that can't happen. Do you still talk to those companies and still try and plan ahead and set some dates and hope for the best?
I wish you could see my dining room table. It has been filled with at least 50 other plans of how we were reopening and when we're reopening, including the fact that we're spending a great deal of time with over a 100-page document that actually chronicles how our large venues can open safely when we are able to open safely. I mean, we've been meeting with epidemiologists and engineers and hygienists, and we also work on task forces both locally, regionally, and nationally to look at how will we get back to quote unquote normal.
And I don't know how much of that you can share, but I'm sort of curious because, you know, when you have a brand new theater, a modern building, they probably can do things with the air system and, you know, the filtering and all of that. Of course, part of Broadway in Chicago's world are the classic old theaters, the Palace they're just gorgeous theaters that have been around forever. How do you adjust for that?
Well, amazingly, we've been working on ventilation systems, and we're going to be able to work on those. And we're doing touchless entry from your tickets to the bathroom. You know, we're going to be increased cleaning and sanitization. And depending on when we open, there might be self-certification and personal responsibility, which is, you know, wearing masks. And all of that will be included in our plans. I mean, you know, they have safely opened in other countries like Korea, where that kind of behavior of wearing masks and having gone around through a pandemic previous to this, they're a little more attuned and understanding of it and ready to go.
You know, I received a survey just the other day from Timeline Theater. It's very close to your heart, as
yes,
you've been
much.
On their board forever. And they were asking all the questions you were just talking about. Would I be willing to wear a mask? And what was I looking for? And I was happy to fill out the survey. I guess those are the questions the theaters, large and small, have to be asking people.
Yeah, and the problem is those questions, those answers to those questions change on a daily basis. They might have been different 2 months ago versus now when Chicago is back in, you know, pretty much a lockdown state. So I think that varies. But the one thing I know for sure is our audiences are starved to come back. And they will, if you're responsible and they're responsible, they will come back. I know that for sure. I mean, when we do open, we're going to open big with shows like Six and Frozen and The Devil Wears Prada, pre-Broadway. And those shows, which are still available, people are interested and they want to buy tickets and they want to plan for the future. So I know that our audiences have not left us. And while I know that there's some online performances out there, unfortunately, theater really doesn't do takeout. It's about the experience of being together.
There's no question about it. And listen, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it breaks my heart when you think of all the actors, all the different people who work in that industry and can't work, and they have second jobs, but the second jobs are usually as a waiter in the restaurant industry or something else that's also closed.
Yeah, I don't think there's been enough attention given to the hundred of theater artists, hundreds of thousands of theater artists that are out of work. And not only are they out of work, but for instance, many of them are out of their health insurance and many of them have no other way to earn a living because of the fact that the other, like you said, the restaurants are. So it's been a very, very difficult time. And I am so proud of the many theater companies that have hunkered down and figured out a way, including Timeline, of finding a way to keep moving forward. As Steppenwolf said, Timeline's in a situation where they've bought a property in Uptown, and they are still forging forward on how they will be able to open that building for the future. And this is important. It's important for us to continue to move forward and continue to see what does the future look like, because it will be different than it is now.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And both of us can't wait to open it. And of course, I'm happy to say that doing our part on Comcast, running marathons of our Broadway and Chicago backstage shows, raising money for the Illinois Arts Fund. There are at least we live in a city where the leaders care about the arts.
Yeah. We do. We all care about the arts and the audience members. I can't tell you the number of calls and emails that our staff has gotten, really reaching out to us, making sure we're okay. And, you know, it's a very isolating year that we're in.
It is, but hopefully we're going to get through it together. Eileen, I hate to cut us off, but it's a heartbreak coming up. Eileen Licario, the Vice President of Broadway in Chicago.
Thank you so much for all
the work you can do. I hope to see you again soon. This is our health segment. I lost my mom a couple of years ago to Alzheimer's disease. And if you know anybody or lost anybody or are dealing with the dreaded Alzheimer's disease, you know how just horrendous it is, not just on the patient, but on caregivers and family members. So I wanted to get an update to see where things stand. So joining me is Dr. Maria Carrillo. She is the chief science officer for the Alzheimer's Association, which is housed here in Illinois. Dr. Carrillo, welcome. Thanks for your time.
Great to be with you, Paul.
So I think I just want to start with, you know, I mean, every year we hope for the cure. We hope to get closer. We all miss our loved ones. I miss my mom. Where do things stand now with the drug research? Are we making progress?
Well, you know, I think that's the question we probably get all the time. And, you know, your family was affected. I'm sorry to hear that. Our family is affected. We lost two of our parents to that. And we all are looking for at least a more effective treatment, really. But it is a very exciting time right now. I know that probably you might have heard, but many of our listeners might have heard that there is for the first time in 15 years, a drug at the FDA that is being considered for the treatment of Alzheimer's memory and function. It is a drug by a drug company called Biogen. And so that, I think, demonstrates the excitement of the field, the forward momentum that we are experiencing, because we know that this is a devastating disease for more than 5 million Americans today and, you know, 16 million of their caregivers who really carry on that torch for their loved ones to take care of them.
And so many people think, well, you know, what can you do about it? I mean, aside from the drugs, which will one day be here to help. But the truth is, there's a lot of research going on right now saying, you know, your lifestyle may have something to do with whether or not Alzheimer's goes after you. It's culminating in something called the U.S. Pointer Study. So can you fill our listeners in on what that's all about?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the most exciting things about Alzheimer's dementia research, and really other dementias as well, is that we are learning that we may be able to treat Alzheimer's and dementia very similarly to how we treat cardiovascular disease or maybe even some cancers. And that is that you do have, of course, a pharmaceutical approach, but you also make recommendations for reducing your risk of things that can be done by just changing our daily habits. And so the research that has shown that is coming out of a Lancet Commission report that's global. It says that up to 40% of dementia worldwide is actually modifiable, 40%. And we are really proud that in the United States, the Alzheimer's Association has brought a very positive study from another country, from Finland actually, that worked there to the United States. And we're trying to modify four risk factors that are a part of our everyday choices and lifestyle in some ways, and that is physical activity. We're trying to modify and make sure that people are paying attention to heart disease. We're ensuring that people think about nutrition as a part of that. And also cognitive engagement. What does that mean? It means keeping your mind sharp and active. These are the four tenets of our study. We're enrolling 2,000 people in this country to try to demonstrate that people 60 and over who are at risk for dementia may actually be able to slow their cognitive decline, slow their memory decline as they age, if they follow these four modifiable risk factors. That's exciting.
I know that the study, the U.S. Pointer study, is actually, it's nationwide. They're searching it all over the country. But Chicago is one of the locations, which means people here can actually take part in this.
Exactly. So there is a Chicagoland site. It really operates out of Advocate and Rush. So many of us know where that is. And, you know, if you want more information on how you might be able to find out about it or enroll, it's at ALZ.org/pointer. Or, you know, you can call certainly our phone number at 800-272-3900. But it's very important to note that, you know, if you're a marathon runner already, you're probably not going to qualify. We're looking for people that have room to improve in terms of these modifiable risk factors, because we want to show that over 2 years, we can, in fact, actually slow cognitive decline by modifying what we do every day.
So it sounds like you're telling me the junk food that I live on is something I'm going to have to stop if I'm a part of this study. It goes on for 2 years. Is there an age range they're looking for? I mean, how old should you be to be part of this?
Yes, we are looking for people actually that are 55 years to 75 years old. There's a lot more information on our website. But, you know, looking for people who are at risk for dementia. So if you have a family member like yourself, like myself, and have one of these risk factors already that are related to really cardiovascular risk, like high blood pressure, cholesterol, things like that. Again, room to improve. And that's what we're looking for, to see if we can demonstrate these tools that we can actually teach everyone might be able to help us also with our memory. I mean, it's fascinating to think that absolutely what's good for your heart is 100% good for your brain.
And we're just about out of time, but if you have a family member that's had it, it doesn't mean you're going to get it if you're a child. It just means you're at higher risk.
That's correct. If you have a family member, you may be at higher risk. There are lots of complicated genetics pointing to this, but there is nothing determinant if your loved one is a later onset Alzheimer's individual. That means the average age of about 73.
All right. Dr. Maria Carrillo, Alzheimer's Association's Chief Science Officer, thank you so much for the work that you do. Find a cure. It'd be appreciated. And people can check out the Alzheimer's Association's work at ALZ.org, ALZ.org, or the helpline at 800-272-3900. Thank you so much. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.